The history of presidential pardons is a long one. Robert George is professor of legal philosophy at Princeton University. He says the writers of the Constitution based the president's power to pardon on an English rule, and they thought it was essential that the pardon power be absolute.
They wanted someone to be in a position, the position that the king had been in, to make a controversial pardon where justice or the common good of the political order would be served by a pardon.
Did they not trust the courts?
They wanted the power to be vested in someone with a stature to make the decision on behalf of the whole community, and someone who wasn't an appointee, but was the elected representative of the people. There's a sort of combination of the democratic and monarchical aspects of the presidency that worked to make the president just the office in which to vest the pardon power.
They must have imagined some situation in which the courts had spoken and that this wasn't satisfactory.
Yes, that's right. Either an injustice had been done or the guilty man was in fact declared to be guilty, but nevertheless the interests of the political community as a whole would be served by pardoning him. And the earliest cases we know about are cases involving treason, where treasonous acts were committed, but where the judgment was that despite the treason, a pardon would be the best way to heal the wounds, then a pardon should be granted. And the pardon should be granted by the executive branch, by an executive officer, not by a court.
I would think perhaps after the Civil War there might have been quite a few.
That's exactly right. There probably would have been more had President Lincoln survived. His strategy was plainly a strategy of healing the nation after the war. We know from all his writings and speeches that he was very interested in that, and probably the pardon power would have been used, I suspect, much more effectively than it was used toward that end. But that's precisely the kind of situation that the pardon power is designed to address, a situation where the country's good, the healing of the country, could be advanced by pardons. That's why, by contrast, the pardon of Mark Rich appears to be so tawdry.
Have there been any attempts over the years to limit the president's power to pardon?
They've all fizzled. Attempts very frequently have been made in the sense that people, members of the House or Senate, other political officials have raised in the face of controversial pardons, such as the pardon of President Nixon by President Ford, the possibility of limiting the pardon power. But in the end, they've all fizzled. Remember that the theory of the pardon power, the theory of having an unqualified pardon power, is that the president needs to be in a position to make a controversial pardon when the public good or justice demands it. So adding qualifications, as have been proposed from time to time, seem to cut against that interest.
Granting a pardon involves certain risks by a president.
Yes, it does, and perhaps that's why presidents frequently, and here President Clinton is certainly no exception, put off the controversial pardons until they're on their way out the door.
Once a pardon is granted, does Congress have any say in the matter?
None whatsoever. The pardon power is unqualified. So that all those who are unhappy about it can do is grind their teeth and threaten to put in motion a constitutional amendment.
Or they can hold congressional hearings.
Yes, that's right. They can attempt to exact a political price from the president for having done it. Where a president is leaving office, as President Clinton now has, it's unclear how much benefit that will be. Perhaps his party will be made to pay the price, but he himself is, as it were, beyond punishment.
So the whole idea of hearings is political embarrassment.
Well, I wouldn't ascribe that motive to those who are calling for the hearings necessarily. I think they want to send a message that the pardon power is a power that really genuinely should be used for the cause of justice and the common good. So the message is to future presidents that this sort of abuse of power, if indeed it is an abuse of power, and it certainly looks like an abuse of power, is the sort of thing that simply won't be tolerated or at least be passed over in silence.
Thank you very much.
You're very welcome.
Robert George is a professor of legal philosophy at Princeton University.